Now, 9 days into January, and you've probably already seen and heard dozens of articles and reports and heard people telling you what to do on the radio. New year, new you, new regime, all that sort of thing. How to hit your fitness goals or your sleep goals or your productivity goals in the new year. I'm joined in the studio now by a man who wants to become a demotivational speaker and encourage us to celebrate an average level of productivity. Patrick Frayne, good afternoon.
Hi, Ray. Yeah, how thanks for helping me launch my new career.
You're brilliant at what you do because there's always a good dollop of humour. But in there, there's pathos and there's serious issues. And that's what you did in the middle of December when you wrote this article, which sounds initially like a bit of fun, you becoming a demotivational speaker. But in fact, it was on a very serious topic and a very serious, I suppose, period in your life.
Yeah, totally. Because like when I started the idea for the article, I was kind of having a bit of a joke. Like it was a joke I had with friends. And it partly became like, and in the wider sense, I'll get onto the personal bit in a minute, but in the wider sense, it came a little bit from earlier in the year. I did a piece with Jen Hogan looking at like kids and their TikTok usage.
A brilliant article.
Yeah, and
scary.
I was looking
article,
at all the TikTok feeds of these kind of teenagers. And I couldn't get over the amount of stuff they're consuming, but also all of us are consuming now that's telling us how to be more productive, how to look better, how to exercise better, how to eat better, how to talk to women and talk to men better. And they're being bombarded with it and we're being bombarded with it. And so I had this thing in my head for ages that there should be someone telling people, you know, have a little bit of a rest. You know, it's fine if you don't do that. Maybe you could just tell your boss you're sick today, even if you're not. And, you know, I thought like, you know, there's a market for that.
The opposite,
yes, right? Yes. But more seriously, when I started writing it, like over the course of the year, so earlier in the year, I had like some pretty serious burnout. Like I hit a total wall with overwork. And I think one of the things that happened around the time is I ended up talking to a lot of other people. And I realized that there's a ridiculous amount of burnout out there. And I think this year in particular, or last year in particular, like it kept coming up. I kept talking to people who kind of hit a wall at work. And typically how it kind of manifests is you start feeling, no matter what you do, you'll never get anything done. You can't get enough work done. You're not good enough. There's this kind of culture of, you know, we're all meant to be excellent all the time, like amazing at what we do all the time. And if you're not amazing and excellent all the time, well, then what are you doing? You know, and I kind of hit a wall with that earlier in the year. And it was like all the typical kind of stuff people talk about. Like I had an anxious feeling in my chest constantly, wasn't getting any joy from anything because I was just working too hard. And when you feel like you're not doing well enough, you end up working even more.
To compensate.
And I kind of eventually went to a doctor and the doctor said, look, you need to take sick leave. And this had actually happened before and I didn't take the leave because I'm an idiot, like in the past. And taking the sick leave was the best thing I could have possibly done. Like I took a couple of weeks. And what it allowed me to do was kind of reset and rethink and think about how the things that were motivating me weren't my motivations. Like a lot of it was, like I think there's two reasons people get burnt out or are burnt out a lot at the moment. One is a systemic reason. I think an awful lot of organizations have stripped things back to the bone and are working on skeleton crews compared to what they used to work on in the past. So on the one hand, people are increasingly being asked to do more work than you can possibly actually do. So you always feel like you're a little bit behind. And then secondly, we live in a kind of media culture and social media culture that's constantly telling us it's all about our own organization of our own time, like that it's stuff we're doing wrong.
Yeah.
You know, that it's things that are in our control and that there's no reason why.
Okay, so loads of things to talk about there. So let's go back to how you felt then. You know, was it a build up? Did it happen overnight? Could you feel it coming on?
It happened. Like it's happened to me before, and the way it always kind of happens is I don't necessarily feel it build up. Like I always work. I have a tendency to overwork, and it comes from anxiety. It then just hits me like a ton of bricks, like that I've not. I don't know why I'm working. You know, like I'm not particularly getting joy from it.
So sort of an existential crisis, is it?
Yeah.
Why am I doing this? Why am I here?
Yeah, and you always feel a little bit behind. I think a lot of people, I talked to a lot of people who felt burnt out last year afterwards, like had these kind of conversations, this feeling that you'll never hit the finish line, right? Always playing catch up, which is one of my big, like, this won't come like a realization to people who are a bit smarter than me, but like hit me like this huge like epiphany, which is, oh, you're never, like, even if everything was perfect, you're never going to finish everything, right? That's like a fact of life. So knowing that actually allowed me to relax a little bit, because then
you use the word in there that, you know, it's got a lot of bad press of late.
Yeah.
Perfect. Because, like, there is no perfect, is there?
No, and that was the other thing. Like, I think it was particularly when I was looking at those young people's kind of social media feeds, everyone's being encouraged to be the best all the time. And the reality is, like, most of us can only be average most of the time. Like, occasionally we all excel at different things.
Yes.
For a bit. But, like, the very nature of the word average.
Oh, but that's it, because it's that curve, isn't it? So yeah. Most of us are in the middle there. It's only the few or at the extremities there.
Yeah.
But what about the best version of yourself, Patrick?
well, this is part, like...
No, but that is a phrase that's used, isn't it? Constantly. It's been thrown at us.
But even that, I feel, puts pressure. Like, I think that 10, 20 years ago, like 30 years ago, I think people had a better understanding of this. Like, I think that we need hobbies, we need community, we need time off. We need time that isn't productive. Like, there's an obsession with our modern culture, there's an obsession with productivity, and definitely with me, but I think with a lot of other people too, because that piece got a bigger reaction than any piece I've done in years. And it was all from people who went, I thought I was going mad, you know, because everyone felt like they were chasing something impossible.
Yeah, it's interesting to say that they had a better understanding years ago.
Yeah.
It's not that they had an understanding. It's now that it's gone.
Yeah.
We miss it. And now, I suppose, with hindsight, we understand that that was the better way to live.
I don't think it has to be gone, though. I think we need to remove, kind of culturally remove a few things. Like, some of
like
it
capitalism.
Is...
Just like that. Here we go.
Well, like, even capitalism, I think you can, like, there's a really simplistic narrative that, like, you know, and I have it in my piece, like hyper-capitalism, where more and more of the rewards of our productivity is going to a smaller and smaller cohort of people. That's not great. Nice capitalism, like the local shop and the bookshop, that's all fine. That's all part of our community. And I think that having a more community-focused society, like having our society built more around our actual needs rather than the kind of needs that were devised by a certain kind of type A psychopath who is constantly chasing after things and thinks that all of the rest of us should be running at that pace all the time.
So you're talking about, like, entrepreneurs, billionaires.
Yeah.
You see, like, I listen to a lot of this commentary around capitalism now, and it suggests that there's some strategic plan on behalf of these people, that they get into some room like Bezos and Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg, and they plan. But that isn't the way it is.
No,
this has happened over time by accident. It's not by design.
Yeah, and also, like, I think there was a different understanding of what governments were for in the middle of, say, the 20th century. And I wrote about this in the piece as well. There was a sense that governments were there to provide for the needs of the average person in a society. And to a large degree, like, we're lucky we live in a country where that's kind of true, but not always true. And there's an awful lot of ordinary people who aren't getting the best because we've let certain things slip, like housing. And there's an awful lot of people, like, I'm also writing from a position of privilege because I have a full-time job with the Irish Times, and they're a very supportive employer. And there's an awful lot of other people who are working in, like, a gig economy where they're self-employed, and they're even more stressed than I was. But there was an understanding, I think, in the past that we need to return to, that society isn't just for winners, that society, and that we shouldn't always feel the need to be striving to win. And it's not like, I think everyone listening feels that need, but I think we all feel some of the time that there's a kind of message out there that you only deserve kind of things like a nice retirement and a house and a decent job if you're like a mad workaholic and overachiever, rather than, which I think the understanding was 30, 40 years ago, that the average
person
should have these things. So obviously we're not going to fix that because of like my article.
No.
But like I think one of the, that's a systemic thing. But what goes with the systemic thing is a kind of propaganda beat that we all need to be excellent producers of stuff all the time. And I'm not sure that that's good for any of us.
Yeah, like, I don't want to paint the tech companies again as the ogres, you know, that have caused all of this. But they have contributed in a huge way.
Yeah.
And they've had the run of the place, as in the run of the planet, for quite some time now.
Yeah.
Because it was seen as the safe, sexy thing by governments all over the world. They cozied up to the, to the tech companies and let them run riot. And here we are, what, how many years on, 10, 15 years on? And we're sort of picking up the pieces and cleaning up the mess.
Yeah, like, I think we should focus a lot on the tech companies and the messages that they kind of push out there. And we should focus a little bit on, like, one of the things.
But they'll say they're just a conduit for the messages that people want to put out there. Do you know, like,
yeah, like, except that one of the things that say social media, because I do think social media is part of this problem. Social media thrives on kind of gurus, people who have something to sell. And at the moment, it seems to incentivize people who are kind of trying to sell a message about how to live. And the danger for me now is that I'm going to sound like one of those people, right? Like, I'm only joking about becoming a demotivational speaker, and I don't want to put more pressure on people.
Patrick Frayne, guru.
Yeah. But I think one of the problems with all that is that we're living in that environment all the time. We need to deconstruct it a little bit. We need to, like, there's certain things, like, remember around the time of COVID, the idea of quiet quitting was being discussed. And I remember some of the discussions around that.
The definition of that was that where you just do what you're expected to do and no more. Right.
And the idea that should be controversial was like because initially when I heard that, I went, I'm always going over and beyond. Everyone should do that. Yeah. And then I went, and I'm thinking about it recently going, of course not. Like, you'd never expect a company to give more than they
That's expected of
them. So the idea that we live in a culture now where employees feel like they should do more than they're contracted
and
for,
I suppose, for
is bizarre.
Who are sort of office based means they can bring the office home in their pocket, and that's again tech, isn't it?
Yeah,
because you're never switched off,
and everything's meant to be. And I think one of the problems with the tech thing and the AI thing is kind of hypercharging this again. Is everything has to be faster and more efficient. And I think in that, people kind of lose themselves.
Okay.
And they forget why they're doing their jobs in the first place.
Just back to you.
Yeah.
So you were always an anxious person.
Yeah.
Were you?
Yeah.
Were you?
I think I was
sensitive.
I was a swat. A sensitive swat, right? And so there's a kind of thing too, like, I've realized, and I've talked to a lot of people who are a bit like me, where you go through kind of life and you go through school and you kind of go through your exams, and there was always like a finish line with all of those things, you know. And I think the difference, I think why a lot of people feel burnt out now, is people feel like there'll be a moment when you get to rest, you know, when everything's done.
Yeah.
And I do think, like, there's a few kind of revelations I had, personal revelations, that won't be revelations necessarily for other more emotionally intelligent people than me, that, you know, it's not always going to be done. See, so slowing the pace makes more sense. Re-engaging with what you like about the things you do makes sense, rather than quality, not quantity of work.
I was just thinking about you, and it's only in the recent past that you would be getting metrics about exactly what you do.
Like, yeah.
There would have been a time when the Irish Times or the Independent, whatever, they just got figures on the paper.
Yeah.
But now you were able to tell me that your article on becoming a demotivational speaker was one of the most popular. So you were getting metrics about how many people engage with your specific article.
Well, I think everything is more measurable now, and we measure stuff, and that's the thing that comes from the tech world as well. And there's a really... the economist Joseph Stiglitz once said, what we measure is what we do. So you end up chasing the thing that's most measurable. And we become obsessed with measuring things.
And that's not necessarily good.
No, it's not, because there's an awful lot of what we do that's more qualitative and has a more... The more important stuff tends to be a bit more elusive. So there's a danger that by listening to the tech guys about, like, engagement and, yeah, you know, numbers, that we kind of lose...
World. That's their world.
That's their world. That, yeah, we lose kind of contact with the important stuff.
Yeah, I want to keep it mainly about you, but we, yeah, will go sort of a bigger picture as well. I'm just... So you're in your mid-40s.
Late 40s,
right. I remember when the crash happened in 2008, somebody saying, yeah, to me that this is going to affect a whole generation of people,
yeah,
who will... not be able to own their own houses or whatever for, you know, they won't be able to follow the normal path that they would have witnessed their parents and their grandparents going through. Yeah. Get married at a certain age, buying a house, having children. You know, there was sort of a well-worn logical path of how life went. And this person said to me that this crash is going to upset all that. Now, other things have upset it as well. But I'm wondering, is that part, when you're talking to your contemporaries, is that part of this sort of disenchantment with capitalism and disenchantment with the world in general?
I think one of the issues now, and I think it's one of the issues with the productivity thing, is that in the absence of analysing why our society can't provide more of the things it used to provide for people, like housing, you know, back when we were a very poor country, we were building large amounts of social housing.
Yeah.
Instead of asking those questions, there is a focus put on the individual now increasingly. And I think that's part of where the burnout feeling comes from, because instead of going, actually, it's collectively that we build good lives. It's not individually. It's not purely individually that you build a good life for yourself, that if you don't have the support of your society or your, like, so on, you don't have the support of your family. Some people do and some people don't. If you don't have the support of the wider society to build a life for yourself, it's not enough to be doing it on your own. And I think that then there is, like, if you look at the messaging around all those gurus and all that, there's not enough focus, I think, on the wider systemic thing and the fact that it's as a collective that we usually make good lives.
Yeah, it's the Wild West. I read your article that you did with Jen Hogan on TikTok. I found it very depressing.
Yeah.
Firstly, the amount of time that young people are spending on TikTok.
Yeah.
Second, the messages that they're being exposed to, with no filter, no censorship.
Yeah, no real regulation. And, like, no. I mean, like, TikTok would say that they remove dangerous content, but
97% of dangerous content. But when you look at their metrics, the amount of stuff that they go through, 3% is still quite dangerous.
Yeah, and also the stuff gets taken down, but it's been seen first a lot of the time, you know. And even the stuff that's more benign, I'd worry about the wider message of some of that. And I think it's just a version of what adults are being fed as well in a different way. And again, it's about, it's a very individualistic approach.
So not as a guru, not as an influencer, but still as a person who's been through something, which was worrying, obviously.
Yeah.
And you took time off and you shared it. Why did you share it?
Because I think it's important. Like, I've written about my mental health before. And I think it's important that we don't, I don't think we stigmatize those things anymore anyway. So I don't think it's like writing that might have been 10 or 20 years ago. But also I think it's important to tell people that if you are hitting a wall with burnout and you are lucky enough to work for
a supportive organization,
take the time you need. Because I definitely think that, like, I went to counseling, I started doing more exercise, and I got to do some thinking and a little bit of rewiring about how I was thinking about myself.
And that was this question, sort of the advice you would have for people, I suppose.
Yeah. And like...
And what is the advice?
Well, the advice, firstly, it's important to think a little bit more cyclically about things, that you'll never get to the end of the workload. So therefore it's important to sometimes just slow the pace and go, it's time to take a break. Being average isn't bad, right? Like, we can't all be excellent all the time. I think there is a kind of culture that seems to think that excellence is a choice, but the reality is there's millions of people in this country. We can't all be the best. The other thing is, like, I really like my job, and not everything is meant to be hard. And I think that if there's a job that you formerly enjoyed and you're not enjoying it as much, ask yourself why. And I think sometimes it's to do with you're working too much. You know, like, I'm back enjoying my job again because I put the brakes on a little bit, you know.
Now, let's see. Really enjoyed Patrick's witty writing style. His short stories are brilliant, especially his demotivating article, which I have saved for rereading. Being good enough is good enough. It needs to be said, but Patrick has said it in such a simple and hilarious way, says Marion Kildare. I'm happy in my role in work. I'm decent enough at it and it pays me well enough to live the life I want. Yet I have these monthly reviews in work where I'm constantly made feel like I'm lacking ambition because I don't want to progress any higher or apply for a manager's job.
See, this is exactly what I'm talking about. He's probably doing a really good job, but he doesn't want to do something else that someone else thinks he should do.
The best thing I did 2 years ago was delete Facebook and Twitter. No scams anymore. Random people contact me. I'm in control of where I get my news now from viable sources. I saw Tim Minchin did an interview in some podcast and he stopped. You know Tim Minchin?
Yeah.
He's completely locked off Facebook and whatever else, Instagram and all those things, and he feels a lot better for it. See, I've been shouting this from the rooftops for a long time because I'm of a certain age where I didn't get sucked into it. But I don't know how it's going to pan out. No, nobody does. Nobody does. But it's a global problem and it needs global reaction.
Yeah, I think there's local solutions. Like I think another thing I said in the piece that I think is really true is that that when you're not overworking, you're also more engaged in your community and your society. And like, I noticed that in myself. Like, it's easier to just engage with your neighbors or the bus driver or community work or activism or like things that are important and connect you to your wider community. And the other thing I discovered, I kind of knew this anyway, but you forget it when you're in these bad periods of overwork, is that you're more than just the thing you're meant to be productive at. And it's really important to kind of remind yourself that you're
a husband, like, a brother,
you're a neighbor,
you're a singer.
You're that funny eccentric guy who lives down the road, you know, but like you're all these different things. And it's important to have hobbies. Like, there's another kind of drumbeat all the time is you should have like a second side hustly kind
Which
of
means
job.
So you have to have an ambition. The hobby has to make you money. It can't be just something like, there for joy.
A hobby is an amazing thing and you don't have to be brilliant at it. It just has to be something that you do for yourself. You played the drums.
Well, you laughed so much. I can't believe
it. I just want a jab. We should bring them in.
I don't know. I love it and it brings me joy and I don't care what anybody else thinks. I don't care if you come on the radio and laugh at me, Patrick Frayne. I'm strong.
But that was a supportive laugh. It was a laugh of support.
But I read this book. It's called Changing Gear. I don't know why I picked it up a few years ago. I've recommended it to a lot of people. It's about retirement. And the premise of the whole thing is that we live longer now and some people want to retire in their 60s. So they could have 20 years of quality life or more even. Look, Rod Stewart is 80 tomorrow. Eamon Dunphy is 80 this year. So what do you do with that sort of third phase of your life? And one of the things they suggest, and you've sort of alluded to it there, is that you go back, nearly go back to your teenage years and think of things that brought you joy in those years and maybe revisit those.
Yeah, no, totally. Like I used to draw all the time and I'm thinking of going back and doing a course just because there's something about curiosity. And I think that's another thing that you can kind of lose when you're like focused in the funnel of work that you're good at and like just following an interest in something. And again, forgetting about excellence and forgetting about winning and doing something just because the experience of it is enjoyable.
There you go. Right. We'll have another chat like this next week. Patrick Frayne, thanks very much. And it's there to read online, the irishtimes.ie. And the heading is, and I have it here somewhere. Yes, I am becoming a demotivational speaker. Let's all have an averagely productive December, but you can apply that to any month. Yeah. Thanks, Patrick. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.